New ideas and new technology are causing seismic shifts in the media industry. Where are we headed? What does it mean? Keep listening. Media strategist Gabriella Mirabelli talks with the brightest minds in entertainment and business. Meet the innovators, the risk takers, and the disruptors on the front lines of change from Hollywood, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and beyond. The future is coming to a screen near you. Are you ready? This is the Up Next podcast with Gabriella Mirabelli.
Welcome to Up Next. I'm your host, Gabriella Mirabelli. Today, I'm interviewing Himesh Bise, the CEO of Cinecore. He is a leading broadband, multi-screen, and mobile executive with a history of industry-leading growth and pioneering initiatives in advanced advertising, broadband video, and direct marketing. Prior to Cinecore, he led new services and platforms for Comcast Cable, where his portfolio included content platforms like Xfinity StreamPix, cloud products, prepaid services, and X1 apps, all transforming the consumer experience. He also previously led the internet business for Charter, the mobile business for AOL, and was a leader in the telecom practice of McKinsey & Company. Himesh, thank you so much for joining us today. Before we dive in with Cinecore's specific questions, I'm interested in your career, and it's concentrated in the telecom sector, but you've really been ahead of the curve, working with AOL before mobile took off, ahead of the curve again, developing Xfinity StreamPix at Comcast. And I'm curious, just as a way to frame our conversation, how do you approach things? Are you looking for gaps in the telecom world and working to develop products to fill those gaps? How are you consistently ahead of the curve? How do you approach things?
Well, first of all, Gabriella, thank you for having me on the program. Careers are interesting things. We'd love to all think that we are very focused and insightful how we select things. And there's a little bit of that for sure. And then there's a little bit of, in my case, working with good people and finding great opportunities to grow personally and professionally, right? I started off my career as a consultant for many years, working in the telecom, media, wireless space particularly, which gives you a tremendous exposure, I think, to how various companies think, how they work through and create their strategies, the risks they're facing, the opportunities they see ahead for their businesses. And that was a great kind of reference point to make the decision to join AOL. And even at AOL, I think I was fortunate to be able to work in mobile, right, which was pretty nascent, really fast growing. And AOL was a really important player in that nascent mobile space, right? It goes back to the days of WAP and Java and Brew and instant messaging on mobile phones.
It's crazy if you think about it now, because it seems like, we're so far, far past. But at the time, it was that, that was where it was all at.
And yet, some things continue to remain the same. One of the most used and most powerful experiences we had on mobile at AOL was our instant messaging service along with email. And if you look at the evolution of mobile experiences and some of the services that are most powerful and most used today, they still have such a strong messaging component.
Oh, it is fascinating. It's fascinating how social spiked, but now it's actually moving to messaging. It really, I find that fascinating, that whole, how people are moving around the technology, where they end up landing. That's a good point.
Yeah. And then from there, I worked at a couple of cable companies, first at Charter, where I was responsible for our broadband products, and then at Comcast, where I was responsible for our new platforms and services. And again, in both those instances, working with people I like, I trust, in businesses that were pursuing new opportunities or trying to really improve and turn around the business, in Charter's case, way back.
Right.
I guess my experiences at Comcast then lead me to Centicor, where I am, you know, it's one of those companies where I have such tremendous respect for, because it continues to push the envelope, continues to think about the next generation of consumer experiences and businesses that can be built around that. And so the opportunity to work on advanced video services and advanced advertising on different kind of transaction platforms, I think was just, you know, personally very exciting.
Right.
And I think it's those kinds of experiences that ultimately brought me to Centicor, to a company that then can help develop that whole suite of digital platforms that consumers will ultimately want to use, but are delivered to them by the people who have those customer relationships, have those subscriber relationships, and want to continue to add on to them a new wave of digital apps.
Right. Now, that's perfect segue into, can you tell the audience, some of whom might not be aware of what Centicor does, precisely for that reason, that the consumer doesn't necessarily touch them directly. Can you just give a brief overview of a few of your products and just sort of general information to frame the conversation?
Sure. So, you know, at Centicor, our mission ultimately is to help our customers deepen engagement with their consumers, with their subscribers. And we do that by offering them a suite of digital services. We are a technology development shop. We offer multi-platform products, but we're also unique in that we are a revenue and monetization partner for them. So let me give you an example. You are a household that has just moved to, let's call it, Louisiana, right? And you have bought a new home or rented a new home. You've come into it. Probably some of the first things you do is you figure out where you're going to get your broadband connection. So you call up the local ISP, maybe it's CenturyLink in that neighborhood, and you subscribe to a broadband service. When you get that broadband service, most likely, in this example, CenturyLink or any other ISP, will direct you to a homepage on the web as kind of your gateway into the web experience. It's kind of a landing page that provides you a bunch of services, a bunch of news, but also is a gateway into the services that you can expect from your broadband provider. That gateway experience into news, into information, into your ISP's services and your bill pay services, et cetera, that page is managed by us. It's a completely turnkey product offering. We compile all of the content, all of the news, and kind of really help our customers, in this case ISPs, build this relationship with their customer bases. It gives them a place on the web to try and go to every day, every week, and because of that engagement and that relationship, it kind of helps them extend their relationship with the ISP. But also from a consumer point of view, it's a good experience because in a snapshot, it opens them up to some of the news and information that might be most critical to them, right? So that's one piece of it. Then the next thing, again, going back to our example, you've moved to this new home. When you get on that page and when you kind of have created this experience of coming back every day, it's perfectly natural then to figure out a way to monetize it, to kind of create additional value. And we do that on behalf of our customers by offering search and advertising services. We manage the digital ad inventory on the page. We have a relationship with Google that allows us to enable Google-powered search on that page, and that's what keeps the business going. And we do that not only for our portal customers, but our monetization program is so good, we kind of do that for about another 1,000 web publishers around the web.
How do you deal with ad blocking? We've run a survey of young millennials, and two-thirds of them are ad blocking. And we anticipate, you know, although the larger population isn't nearly that savvy and using the ad blockers, but we anticipate that it's liable to grow. How is that affecting how you deliver your ads? Is it affecting how you deliver your ads? And then are you noticing any impact on revenue there?
At the core of ad blocking, I think anyway, is a need and an objective to improve the consumer's experience.
Yep.
Right. Ultimately, that's what we're trying to do. And I think if you get beyond kind of the tactical nature of what everybody's trying to do with ad blocking, I think what we're really focused on is how do you ultimately improve that experience, whether that's better ads, better quality ads,
or relevance.
Relevance, the kind of load times on the page, so you're not waiting around for all of these ads in the background to load, that you're getting access to the information. Look, I think those are the kinds of things that ultimately are what make consumer experiences sustainable. And if you do all of those things right, actually, the monetization and the CPMs on the ads, I believe, work themselves out, right? So that's our portal and advertising business. But you can continue down the customer journey. The next thing that many customers look to their ISPs for is email. And this is interesting, right? Because one would imagine that many customers have a variety of email addresses already. But
no kidding, right?
Exactly. And but there is something about trusting your service provider. There's something about knowing that this email address isn't as isn't mined for data as much as many of the free email services might be. And so as part of – and again, you know, email tends to be a very high usage item application on a portal. So we offer email. We are one of the largest providers of white-labeled email in the world.
And you don't data mine at all from that email?
We kind of do it in
very, okay.
So the answer to that is actually no.
Okay.
For the vast majority of our email accounts. So when customers license our email software, when they stand it up and they manage it, both sometimes on an open source basis, sometimes on a license basis, we actually have absolutely no access to the data. Now, when we offer it as a free add-on through some of our service providers, there is advertising that is served. But again, you can serve advertising and make it relevant still on a very arm's length basis without sacrificing the kind of privacy of the customers and having very, very strict rules that all of the ISPs particularly are holding up to maintain kind of the privacy and the data rights of their customers. So everything we do is inside of that window, right?
Right.
Data protection, for example, doesn't mean that a customer doesn't see ads. It just means having a perspective on the kind of data and that you're gathering and how individually relevant it might be and how you use all of that information and what you do with kind of the contents of the email, all of that stuff, we absolutely do not do.
A number of times you've been talking about the experience of the ultimate sort of consumer who isn't your customer. You're sort of you're a B2B service, and then they're B2C. So, but you're talking about the consumer experience. How much control are you completely controlling that interface, that user interface for your customer, so that the consumer experience is a certain way? And then how much does consumer experience impact how you build? I mean, are you designing for the ultimate consumer when you're putting these products together?
We are definitely designing with the end user in mind when we enable a digital experience. You know, we have now information on what are the kinds of information or news articles that people tend to click on, that they tend to like. Where is it intuitive to find information on the page? What's the relationship between an experience that you see on a laptop or a large desktop screen versus the way you engage with a mobile app and how you consume information in a mobile app? And so we've got a terrific design team that works extremely closely with our product team to continue to update those experiences. We went through a pretty major design shift about a year and a half ago when we launched our new wave of portal experiences with kind of a very new design paradigm, very clean, kind of very stream-based, designed for engagement, and built a whole suite of mobile products around it, both browser-based as well as app-based, that had the same paradigm. And again, we continue to evolve, and I'm sure in the next couple of years we will continue to build on that, which actually Gabriel, is a very good segue into video, because we've been talking about consuming news and information, which is the primary goal of our portal experiences, and maybe short-form video. But experiences are also accentuated when you talk about long-form video.
Right.
That is the basis of our video experiences.
Right.
So again, you're in this new home. You may or may not, but hopefully you may, for our customer's sake, subscribe to pay TV. And our last kind of line of products is around enabling those video experiences for you, helping you get access to your TV content and other relevant video content on any device of your choosing.
Right.
And again, there is a lot of sophistication around how we design a search and discovery experience around that, so you can get access to your video content as quickly as possible.
Right. Well, it's interesting there. That sort of brings me to sort of two questions I had. One, backing up to mobile. I know in 2014, after you were named CEO, there's a great quote that you had said that mobile is becoming a critical part of what multi-channel video programming distributor offers. And we've all seen how much traffic has been moving to that platform. And so when you're designing everything, is mobile, it's central to what you're building, yes, because that's where everything is shifting. I mean, you're not sort of blowing out one digital piece and then making it mobile, but mobile is there from the get-go as you're developing things. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Mobile is obviously a very important part of kind of this consumption suite.
Right.
And so when we think about a video experience today, particularly a video experience on digital devices, we look across the spectrum, and mobile is designed as part of the deployment of the product.
Right. It's not like now we're going to make the mobile version. It's from the get-go, you're thinking. And do you believe that mobile growth is exponential?
Yes. I guess for the foreseeable future, right? I mean, ultimately, I think consumers optimize for a particular moment in time, I believe, right? Mm-hmm. And for a particular mindset. If you are at home, sitting on your sofa, a large TV screen may be kind of your best experience. If you are traveling and sitting on an airplane, you know, a tablet might be the best experience. If you are rushing from one place to another, a phone might be the best experience. If you are in a household, but literally, if looking to watch something in private in a room, again, a tablet and a phone might be much more relevant. So I think we all seamlessly optimize across these whole level of options that we have. And I think the most important thing is actually having the option. So I, as a consumer, can make the decision as to what's right for me.
Well, and it's so the ease of that. I mean, again, one of the things we found when we were surveying these young millennials was the level of piracy that was going on. Huge, 69%, I think, were pirating. And they were the sharing of logons is also something that they do. And while sometimes that's beneficial and that you're pumping your content. If you're HBO, maybe you're building a user who wouldn't be buying it, but because they're sharing the logon, they get exposure and then they want to buy it when they have the money. But ultimately, having the ability to, with Netflix or some of these people, when people are measuring their success based on their subscribers, you want to make sure that you're getting the right subscriber, that they're actually the person who's paid for the thing. But also as a user and user experience, nothing is more frustrating if you have to go through panel to get the thing that you've already paid for. And then that, or you could go to Popcorn TV and get it all for free, and that's not so good. Yeah. So, if piracy is driven a bit by ease, making it easy, people may do the right thing if it's easy.
I completely agree. And that's what we're trying to do. And those are the discussions people have when they implement our authentication product, which we call Cloud ID. Mm-hmm. Clearly, you can put in rules depending on every provider's perspective mm-hmm. on fraud prevention, right? So if you've given your password out to many people, clearly you can put in constraints around concurrent logins and things like that.
Right.
But I think the point that you make, which is critical, is all about the ease, right? If you kind of believe people will do the right thing if we make it easy for them, if we make logins hard to remember, the process is different across different platforms. They require, if you're logging into something on the TV set and you need to kind of find a tablet or a computer to kind of complete your TV login, I mean, all of those things make it hard for customers to do the right things. And what we found is when we make it easier, for example, when we deploy things like home-based authentication inside of people's homes, which means if you're inside your own home and kind of logged into your Wi-Fi network, the operator knows who you are. You don't need to log in at all.
I love that idea.
You just go directly into your experience. You go directly into the videos and the networks that you've already paid for.
Right.
And there's a huge increase in consumption and a huge decrease in people dropping off when you have an experience like that. And I think that's the paradigm that we need to continue to implement as an industry.
Right. Right. One of the products you have is a bit like a modern TV guide for content discovery. And I think that, content discovery is such an issue when there's so much original content out there, like John Landgraf from FX talking about, 450 original series produced in 2015. Now, in terms of creating the recommendations, do you think that algorithms are really what's driving it? Or do you think that there's algorithms married with also people, or is it purely people? Like Spotify is wonderful at making recommendations, and they have people involved, employees who aggregate musical playlists. How do you view recommendations and the key to successful recommendations now and going forward?
Recommendations and it's linked to a broader question you had, a theme you had on search and discovery. And if you go back to the core question on searching for and discovering content, I believe the consumer journey is a little bit more complicated than just recommending content based on past performance.
Right.
That is clearly an important element, and we do that. So if you've seen certain shows, we can certainly surface similar and relevant shows to you in your user experience using our personalization engine and using our metadata platform. But I think there are two other pieces that sometimes we forget. One is editorial curation, which I do believe is important, mm-hmm. Because it might expose consumers to content that they might not normally have tried, but may like once they try it.
Yes.
And I think that option is an important part of a search and discovery experience.
Right.
And so we do that too. And then the third element, and this is just the practicality of it from a business point of view, is promotional considerations. You are a pay TV provider or a provider of a bundled amount of content. You probably want to promote some of the new stuff you've acquired.
Yes. Near and dear to my heart, certainly. Yes.
And I think giving content providers the opportunity to do that, to promote newer content that is just available on the service, is I think also an important part of the consideration mix. And
right.
I don't know. Does it hurt the customer? I think if it's already done. If it's done blatantly and too much, but as part of an overall mix, maybe it again adds to
the value.
Serendipitous discovery.
Right, right. So looking at the disruption in the media space, what do you find most exciting?
I just think the opportunity to shape the video watching, information consuming experiences for consumers. It's just constantly evolving because technology is constantly evolving and the options are constantly evolving. And all of us spend so much time on consuming media, optimizing that time by providing the right kind of content and continuing to make the experience enjoyable. It's supposed to be entertainment to some extent and learning, and that's what I'm excited about doing.
Does anything concern you? Is there anything that you think that might be disruption, that's a challenge?
I guess to the discussion we had earlier, there's a challenge and opportunity with pretty much everything. It just I tend to be the glass half full guy, I guess.
That's a good thing. Okay.
So I see opportunities, a lot of opportunity ahead.
Fantastic. Well, thank you again. I really appreciate
it. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye.
We've reached the end of another episode of Up Next, and I'd like to close by thanking a few important people. First, the incomparable voice artist, my friend, Rob Naughton. Thank you. Our production team over at Microfame Media. Big thank you to our guest and new friend, Himesh Bisay. And of course, most importantly, all of you, the members of our amazing audience. Thank you. I'll be talking to you again next week, right here on Up Next.